Captain's log, stardate 42761.3. The Apocalypse Video Trekcast has returned to Season 2 of Star Trek The Next Generation, only to find itself again at the whims of the omnipotent trickster, Q, who has hailed us thousands of light-years into unknown space. What will we find in this vast, unexplored area of the galaxy? Benevolent creatures who just want to say hello? Or will we find a species of robot zombies that will later be used as the basis for a terrible, ultra-violent sequel series in the future?
In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movieless wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
Next time on Star Trek The Next Generation, the evil Q returns.
What do you want, Q?
My purpose is to join you.
No.
And Picard faces Q's wrath when the Enterprise is hurled into a living nightmare.
We have an intruder.
Now the crew is helpless against an invincible race of alien killing machines.
You can't outrun them. You can't destroy them.
On Star Trek The Next Generation.
Hello. Oh, I'm doing the Kirk voice. That's not right. That's
Kirk
not
all the
that's
way.
Not era appropriate. Hello and welcome to the next episode of the Apocalypse Radio Trekcast. I'm your era appropriate captain, Dave. I'm joined again by Jackie.
Your Patrick Stewart is going Michael Caine.
And I'm First Officer Jackie, I should correct myself.
Thank you.
And Lieutenant, you were an ensign. You were an ensign, Sonia Gomez. Now you're
ensign.
A lieutenant. Lieutenant Mike.
We don't have time for your games, Q.
Now be nice to the food dispenser and say please.
I want my daddy now.
Please.
Season 2, Episode 16, I'm getting ahead of myself. Q-Who, not
Q-Hugh.
That'll be later in Season 5 or 6.
Wait, is there really an episode called Q-Hugh?
No, but Hugh does play into one of the episodes, and it's a Borg episode. Anyway, I'm getting it all mixed up in my head right now. This is Season 2, Episode 16, Q-Who, and this is interesting. So Mike, this was your pick. And I was fascinated. So it seems like we all love Q episodes. I was kind of curious when we got into this one. I'm like, what would have been the last Q episode prior to this one, like in the show? And as I said, this is Season 2, Episode 16. Turns out the last Q episode was Season 1, Episode 9. So it had been a long time since there had been a Q episode.
And that's the episode. Is that the one where Q tries to get Riker to be a Q?
Hiding Q. Yeah, Season 1, Episode 9.
Another great.
That's
like,
the one
Riker's
with the famous French pig soldiers.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Well, this one's a little more, I think...
much better.
Notable in terms of like being good.
Yeah, this is... I don't know if we've... I think we've kind of discussed this in our previous Season 2 episode when we talked about... Measure of a Man. But Season 2 is an interesting season because it still represents a rocky start. There's still a lot of bad episodes. But Season 2 is a little bit different than Season 1 because Season 2 has I would say at best season one had okay episodes, but season two, when it was working, it had great episodes, yeah, like we saw last time with Measure of a Man. And while I don't know if I would necessarily say Q Who is a great episode, it's an important one, and it is a good one because it sets up probably the biggest thing to happen to Star Trek. One of the biggest things to happen with Star Trek, and yeah, that would be the Borg, because I think the Borg probably represents, I mean, there are other factors you could say why Next Gen, like when season three hit, there were a lot of good quality episodes, but I think it's safe to say that in season three, the best of both worlds, when that Borg cliffhanger happened, that's when Star Trek really kind of hit the zeitgeist again. Yeah. I was like, oh shit, Star Trek is back in action,
going off.
I think we've described season two as peaks and valleys.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I have to pull my nerd glasses up a bit, and I don't believe this is the first time the Borg have played a factor. I think it's the first time we see the Borg.
They are mentioned before this episode, but this is the kind of reveal of the Borg.
I mean, obviously, this is each episode of Star Trek is not like telling a continuous story in the way that like TV does, you know, in the 2020s. But there is a bit of buildup for the Borg.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's like an episode, I think the first like time the Borg become a factor or are hinted at is like there's some distress call or something's going on with some Federation outpost, and they go there and there's just like a hole where the city used to be.
This is happening also, and this is Data mentions this, it's like, oh, this is the same pattern as like shit that happened along the neutral zone last season, basically, is what he says.
Is pretty
it's fascinating. I should have gone and dug into the trivia on this, but I'm curious if they had the Borg specifically in mind, like as far as like cyborg robot people in mind as the villain. I'm wondering how much they had in mind as for what this villain would be when they did those little lead ups. It seems like they were definitely setting up like a big bad in season one.
Super powerful, super like unfeeling, basically.
It's neat because we kind of, you know, everything is so utopian in TNG, because in the original series there were the Vulcans, right? Or not the Vulcans.
The Romulans and the Klingons. Yeah,
they were like the big bad, especially the Klingons. The Klingons were like the evil people, and in the original in TNG, the Klingons are now no longer at war with the Empire or the Empire. I'm my brain is frazzled right
now.
Wow,
some nerd.
and there is no like antagonist.
Yeah, so the Romulans are like they're at a level in TNG where they're still kind of sneaky, but they're working with them as like a peaceful kind of thing at that point. So yeah, there's that kind of absence of a like some sort of threat that it's a lot easier to dehumanize that threat when that's their whole thing, is that they take on organic creatures and like dehumanize them and depersonalize them and turn them into part of the collective.
And this feels truly sci-fi y too. Because they kind of used, in at least in the movies, the Klingons kind of became like the Soviet Union. And the fall of the Soviet Union, like they were kind of used as like a real world parallel, whereas the Borg, it's just like this, you know, honestly, the Borg, it's funny, the Borg could almost be like, speaking of the Soviet Union, the Borg, like if Star Trek came out in the 50s, like if this was an episode that came out in the 50s, this could very easily be a similar kind of thing to like Invasion of the Body Snatchers or something like that.
You could see someone being like, oh, the Borg is, it's like communism, like we're all like sharing everything.
It's fascinating though, because I was like taking down notes. I was kind of writing notes like, it's crazy how much of the Borg is established in this first episode. But one of the big things that set the Borg up is not established in this one, and that's the assimilation angle.
Yeah.
That is not established at all in this episode. Resistance is futile. That's not established. So
I love the idea though of how they're set up, and like, cuz Klingon and Romulans, the previous antagonists, are basically like humanoid things that are, you know, warlike or evil is really kind of
like
they
emotional
are.
Or boisterous or like cunning, and the Borg are just here.
And the way they're introduced too is Q shows up. And he's basically
let's get
like,
into the storyline here.
Let's get into it.
Yeah, so Q shows up, and it's basically, to kind of simplify things, Q is pretty much like, hey, guys, so...
It's me.
I notice y'all are getting a little big for your britches here, and you humans are really advancing at a faster rate than we thought you would, and I think this is going to cause y'all some problems, because guess what? Space, like, you think you're like starting to get a hang over things, and like, okay, we got Romulans
but
and Klingons figured out,
not.
But like, the universe is vast and unknowable, and there are things out there that you cannot comprehend that will destroy you.
I like the Q voice that we've got.
They will destroy you.
And I love that idea that like, hey, both to like the humans and the characters, but also to the viewers in the show, that like, hey, you think like you've got a idea of what this show will be, but like, we're gonna have fun with like space is infinite.
Space, I don't know if you guys know this, is fucking huge.
There are things out there beyond your comprehension that you're not ready for. Let me show you the Borg.
And it's also on that kind of just like fun Q angle of like, he doesn't care about humanity, but he wants to like, you know, be needed or have them just like ask for his help so we can just be like, haha, sure.
You judge yourselves against the pitiful adversaries you've encountered so far. The Romulans, the Klingons. They're nothing compared to what's waiting. Picard, you are about to move into areas of the galaxy containing wonders more incredible than you can possibly imagine. And terrors to freeze your soul. I offer myself as guide, only to be rejected out of hand.
We'll just have to do the best we can without you.
What justifies that smugness?
Not smugness, not arrogance. But we're resolute, we're determined. And your help is not required.
We'll just have to see how ready you are.
Kill!
This whole thing, yeah, it's interesting. Like, because I guess after the last encounter where he tried to get Riker to join the Q Continuum, he was basically kicked out of the Continuum. They asked him to leave. And I love how he says this. He's like, he basically just kind of wandered the galaxy for a while, bored. He's like, but wait a minute. Then I remembered all the good times I had. And it's interesting. This is like, I think he does this later on. This kind of happens later on. I think the next time we see Q, he offers his assistance. Like, I want to be part of the crew.
Mm-hmm. He comes to a point where he's just like, hey, guys, well, I will do you a huge favor and let you hang out with me. And everyone's like, get the fuck away from
us. I don't think it's
us.
Ever like... addressed in this episode, but there's moments where when he's showing up in like a Federation outfit, mm-hmm. like he's like, hey guys, so like I'm cosplaying,
check me out. Like, we're having fun. Everyone's like, this is not fun in any way, shape or form. He's like, but it is though.
I don't know if we talked about this much in our last handful of Q
was the last
episodes.
One Cupid.
It was
Cupid, yeah. But John D. Lancey's performance as Q, to get into that, like, I love how enamored he is with the humans, particularly Picard. And I like how close he gets to Picard in all of his interactions. Like, when they're
like
on the
physically
shuttle.
Close.
Yeah,
physically
he's like,
close.
I'm going to hang all over you. And, like
it's one thing to, like sit, stand right next to someone and talk into their ear, but he literally puts his face on Picard's face.
That's his fucking move. He'll, like, drape over your shoulder and be like, Jean-Luc.
I love, like, the way he... the physicality of the way the character... Like, to like he'll
Picard
also just be,
just
like, he'll beam
it.
In, like, lounging, like, sideways on the floor.
He loves
like
to
a Roman
beam in,
aristocrat.
Yeah, lounging. And Picard's just standing there, like, just a statue, like, he hates it so much.
He's very, yeah, every time we see him, like when he like snaps his fingers and suddenly they're in 10 forward, he's like, he's not seated in a chair. He's like, he's like leaning like in one of the pillars of like the structure. He's just sort of like weirdly like sitting like in a like part near the ceiling or something like that.
Yeah. Well, he really has to do weird. Some kind of, yeah, like weird cat like kind of just, yes, like me. I'm just causing
like he's the Cheshire cat causing or problems.
Something. Yeah, Cheshire cat's a good definitely the vibe.
Like at what point I'm surprised we never got him literally like dangling off something upside down, like, oh hello.
Right. let's write our fan fiction about a TNG Alice in Wonderland episode where he's the Cheshire Cat, Picard is Alice, I would assume. we can fill in the rest of that later. Anyway.
I bet you they would have done that if only they hadn't already done that in TOS.
And yeah, and they burned that Alice in Wonderland card.
We can't do TOS. That's why they're like, let's do Robin Hood instead.
Yeah.
But yeah, speaking of Q in this episode, I liked, it's almost kind of a little bit of not a whiplash, but in the previous episode with Q, it's when he's trying to recruit Riker, and he's more playful in that episode. Like, I think that's one of those instances where Q kind of would be, kind of the things we'd see him become later, of like more jokey and less sinister. This one's a little bit, I mean, it's got both of that, but I feel like the sinister edge of Q is intact in this episode.
Oh,
because
yeah,
he lets 18 people die and he doesn't bring them back. They're like, all right, Q, like, we know your thing. Like, the 18 people, they're not really dead, right? He's like, oh no.
No, they're dead.
You brought us here. You exposed us to it and you cost us the lives of our shipmates.
Oh, please. Number one. 18 of our people have died. Please, tell us this is one of your illusions.
Oh, no. This is as real as your so-called life gets.
But they were unnamed crew members, well, which, you know, happens like every episode of Star Trek.
What I thought was a little unusual, I assumed they were setting up Ensign Sonia Gomez as one of the fodder for Q's lesson here.
I always remember it as being that, and then every time I'm like, oh no, I guess she's just a person.
Well, that's, I was trying to figure it out, because usually, like, with these side characters or these little moments, usually, like, a like standard, like, TNG episode, they set up, like, a sort of a, like, funny, innocuous thing in the beginning, in this case with Sonia Gomez, that kind of plays in or, like, has a story parallel to, like, the A plot or something. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to sort of speak to, like, you know, the overall theme of the episode or something. And I was trying to, like, unravel what the importance of Sonia Gomez to the plot was. Like, her whole thing is like, I'm so excited and I got to, you know, I'm on the Enterprise and I'm so excited and I'm goofy and I just want to get where the action is and stuff. And I guess, oh well, there it is. I guess it's just sort of supposed to represent, like, humanity's, you know,
yeah,
cockiness,
well,
maybe.
Her quote at the beginning with Geordi, where she says, whatever's out there, we're going to be the first humans to see it, and I want to be a part of that, want to understand it. It's, yeah, that human, you know, drive to explore, this kind of, like, innocent, you know, like, we're going to explore, we're going to find what's out there, and then Q's like, oh, you want to fucking see what's out there?
And that's why I'm shocked that she wasn't one of the people who died. Like, that would have meant something. Like, you know, I feel like that would have played into her arc. She's so excited, then she, oh yeah, you find out what's in space, and it kills you. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like it would have meant more if she died.
I disagree. I think she kind of, as she is here, is more audience surrogate than, like, emotional, you know, lamb for slaughter.
I guess if she wasn't going to be a lamb for the slaughter, then they should have at least gone back to her at the end of the episode.
Yeah, I would have
liked
that.
Like, her and Geordi talking, where she's like, oh no, like, you know. And
there's a lot I don't understand. He's like, you and me both.
Yeah, and then Picard could have been there to say something like, but we're human and we were whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Like, could have been a little bit neater.
It could have been neater with Sonia Gomez paying that off her arc, but at the same time, like, I do enjoy the end of this episode where it's just Picard and Guinan playing 3D chess. And I like the ominous foreshadowing of this scene.
You're just raw material to them. Since they're aware of your existence.
They will be coming.
You can bet on it.
They're coming. You know what I mean? It's a great, and then the music gets all like ominous and stuff, and like it's a really great scene. I like it. It's great foreshadowing, but again, at the same time, it's just like
I would have liked.
They should have gone back to Selena Gomez.
Selena Gomez.
That was a slip. Sonia Gomez. They should have gone
back. And since Selena Gomez.
I should have gone back to Selena Gomez to
no,
say,
you're right, because I feel like there could have been a moment of kind of levity of her and Jordy being like, wow, that's a rough
like
day here, and then we pan over to Picard and Guinan, and it's like they're coming, and it's like I know, and that kind of we're balance of light and dark. But again, it's season two, we're still kind of rough around the edges. I think later seasons, as we've said, find that balance a lot better of having like the little bit of light, even if the episode's ending on a kind of dark note.
Yeah. And speaking of light, like further talking about Sonia Gomez, like what is her, I'm sorry. I know you're excited. I know you're at Ensign.
It's
on
her
the
first
flagship
day.
Of the Enterprise. It's your first day. But why the hell would anybody think to order hot chocolate in engineering, or let alone just while on duty?
She just can't help it. She's so dang cute and excited. Yeah, no, the hot chocolate is alike. Well, this will be spilled in 3, 2. Well, oh, here
exactly.
You go, Picard.
It is Geordi's fault. You're her superior officer. Like the moment she's like, oh, I'm so excited. You know what? I'll get to relax. Hot chocolate. Like what?
Geordi should be like, maybe later, hon. Okay.
Why is there even a feed replicator in engineering? Is my question.
Why not?
Well, if you're getting like a snack or a drink, you probably shouldn't be doing it in engineering.
Look, Sonia.
Yes?
I don't think you want to be around these control stations with that hot chocolate, do you?
Oh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't even have this in engineering. It's just we were talking. I forgot I had it in my hand. I'm going to go finish it over here.
Exactly. That's like the one area where
there should
like,
be,
go to the break room,
food,
please.
Like they I get why you'd have it there, because maybe you're working like 24/7 on the clock on some problem that needs to be solved and you can't leave, but there should be limits on what you can order.
There should be like, a break room in engineering.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where you put the food replicator.
It should just, there should only, you should
shouldn't
only be allowed
right
to order.
Right next to the fucking engineering doodads.
You should only be allowed to order non-messy foods. Like nothing crumbling. No muffins.
I love your point of view, Mike. It's like, well, if they're going to have a pizza party to celebrate team building and engineering, they have to have a food replicator.
No,
right?
I'm saying, like, what if, hot. Like, what if the warp core is, like, in distress and you cannot leave the warp core? You have to be doing it, but, like, you know, maybe they can just sell, like, a protein bar or something.
I think at that point you replicate a, like, Star Trek food pill that just, like, you're having your protein bar,
right,
but it looks
like a
pill.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying replicator with sensible limits.
Okay. Well,
Lieutenant Michael, calm down. We will transport you some pizza for your pizza party.
I do see that you should have no hot chocolate.
No hot chocolate. You know, that seems like a good rule.
No chicken wings. No ribs.
I was thinking again of a classic TOS moment where there's like someone handing out cups of coffee on the bridge.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
No lids.
Putting it on the panel.
Yeah, they're just putting it on the fucking panel, and then
like in paper
cups.
Surprise,
right? Surprise. Yeah, of course. Surprise, surprise. Then the ship gets attacked. I don't think we see like the coffee go everywhere, but that's
but
one of those
like
things
shaking.
Where I'm like, why are lids at least, please?
That's clearly comes from an era when people didn't have computers in their daily lives. So the thought of like putting a cup on there is probably similar to like putting a cup on like a dashboard of a car.
Yeah,
or
at the very least, it's like, well, you know, you spill your coffee on your papers. That's annoying, but whatever. Instead of like, if you
like
spill your
coffee,
the ship is
going to explode.
This is
That's a good thing to bring up. Spilled drinks. We get the moment with Sonia Gomez Picard where she clumsily spills her hot chocolate onto Picard.
All
over his uniform. And there's a moment that's like slightly uncomfortable. She keeps like, in an effort to, I guess, quote unquote, dry
him. She's like manhandling him.
And it's like to the point where she's just like, just touching him incessantly. It's just like,
and
whoa,
Picard is clearly not, like, he's clearly upset.
Ensign.
These
are very tight
me.
Uniforms. They don't leave much to the imagination, please.
Yes, Ensign,
you're getting dangerously close.
Listen, we all know I am the sexiest captain.
I was voted sexiest captain 3 years in a row. It's true. That said,
everyone
please don't
loves
touch
me. But she just, I feel like there a bit of direction could have been given to the actor. So
that's
you're
one of those TV things,
much.
Yeah, of like TV movie of like, no one has ever done this with their human hands, but on TV it's like, oh, I spilled, let me just go wipe my hand on your stomach.
Can you imagine like at your work if you spill coffee on someone and then you start like
and then
you,
start
that your move
grabbing
would be to start
them? Like,
she
no, here's
it
a towel.
Far too much. Like, I can understand maybe, like, a one brief moment where, like, da-da, and that's it, where you, like, touch him for a
yeah,
second.
Yeah, or you have some kind of, like, awkward urge to be like, oh, well, here, oh, no, wait, sorry, and then you, like, kind
exactly.
of pull away. Anyway.
But
this,
she keeps doing it to an uncomfortable level.
TV choice.
It would be again, funny. I'm imagining, like, an edit of this where she's doing it for, like, 5 minutes.
Jordy's like,
like, an uncomfortable...
Well, it's just, it's made even more uncomfortable because these particular season one, season two uniforms
are
so,
so
tight.
And his, just... his like clavicles on display as those ones
yes.
did. Anyway, I'm just saying it's quite sexy.
Well, they're so tight. It's like, it's not like they're not thick uniforms. It's like you're basically touching him at that moment.
Yeah. And... he's not wearing an undershirt. Like,
no,
there's a lot happening.
Anyway, I'm just saying, Sonia Gomez went where no crew member has gone before.
Hey, you got to shoot your shot, man.
She's going to have stories for the rest of her career.
She's like, hey, you guys want to hear that story about the time where I felt up Captain Picard?
Oh, how are his pecs? Are they as hard as we
oh
all imagine
god,
them
like,
to be?
Oh, my God, like, really good. You ever seen him shirtless? Oh, I heard he went to Risa once. Do you think he, like... like did stuff. Oh my god, that's so weird.
So we're all going to the holodeck now, right?
What do you guys think about that?
Oh, I wonder how many Captain Picard fantasies there are programmed into the holodeck by crew members.
How long has Barkley been in there?
As we've discussed, there need to be limits on the holodeck of recreating your professional colleagues.
Yeah, you shouldn't be allowed to do anything with crew members,
and especially not the captain.
it's fascinating. Like Sonia Gomez represents with, you know, kind of only the only other sort of, I wouldn't say plot, but story elements in this episode that aren't Borg related. Mm-hmm. Like this is a very focused episode. There's really
there's
just the one thing going on
of I guess this is probably following the plot, but there's a little bit of that we haven't talked about yet. So you're building the Borg, but you're also building the character of Guinan a bit.
Yeah, that's
true.
The
yeah,
other
true.
Huge part of it. Is,
I think, is this the first time Guinan is like, I know Q?
Yeah.
Yes.
And this is, I think, the first time we really get some information on like who what? And what she is. Like Q reveals.
Thousands of year old.
Yeah, that
and
like,
I love
she is
one
a creature.
Of my favorite Star Trek TNG things about the whole series. And I don't know, spoilers for TNG, but... I love that we never find out exactly what Guinan's deal is. Like, there's
she's
just implications that she's like maybe some sort of deity kind of thing. Like,
she's
along
been
the
alive
lines of Q.
for a very, very long time. She clearly likes to kind of just hang out
but
and
she
talk
is familiar
to people.
With Q. And there's yeah. an implication that wherever she was last from. Was destroyed by the Borg.
Well, she straight up says that the Borg destroyed.
Oh, did she say that?
Yeah, in this episode, yeah. they're talking about, you
scattered
know,
scattered by people across the galaxy.
His screen's activated. I have the other ship.
You're familiar with this life form?
Yes. My people encountered them a century ago. They destroyed our cities. Scattered my people throughout the galaxy. They're called the Borg. Protect yourself, Captain, or they'll destroy you.
Shields up.
Aye, sir.
All deck, stand by.
She's like, this did happen, and so I know what this is, and it's bad. But besides that, like, we never get super in-depth about, like, this is exactly the kind of alien that Guinan is, and this is exactly, you know, how old she is and what she's been doing. It is kind of still left... in some shadows, which works because Guinan is such a just cool and interesting character.
It's one of the many reasons why I will not watch that Picard show.
Yeah.
Because from what I understand, season two of Picard has Guinan. It has Q.
Yeah.
And I'm so terrified that they will they will be like, oh, well, now now's our time. Let's explain, you know, Guinan's whole backstory, where she came from and who she is. It's just like, don't want it.
The closest we get, and it's so fabulous, is in the episode in old-timey San Francisco where she's there, and
that's not explained.
That time loop element of
there with like Mark Twain.
Yeah, she's hanging out at like high society parties in 1800s San Francisco.
I love that.
And that's, you know, the kind of closed time loop element of the first time that she meets Picard, where she doesn't know him, but he knows her, and then someday it'll be the opposite.
So. That's an interesting thing, to putting the Guinan backstory pieces together, because she says, like, they encountered the Borg, her people encountered the Borg, what was it, 1,000 or thousands of years ago?
I think she says only, like, 100 years ago. I want to double-check this.
It was, like, 1,000 or something, because I'm putting it together in my mind, like...
I mean, it's longer than a human lifespan.
She says 100 years. So, yeah, this is
100 years.
Somewhat recent thing for her.
Because I was just trying to think, you mentioned the whole Mark Twain adventure, like, because I was like thinking, okay, so did the Borg scatter her people across the galaxy, and then she's like, I'm gonna go to Earth, like in the Terran system, and mess around with these Mark Twain people.
She references I really love that two-parter, which is why I remember it so well, but she references in that episode, I think, when she's first meeting Picard and she doesn't know who he is, and he's like, hey, I know you. She's like, no, you don't. And she says something of like, did my father send you? So I think I kind of like the implication that, like, you know, her people are intact, but she's off, you know, having fun. She's visiting planets.
She could be backwater people on Earth.
Her dad is like, what are you doing now? She's like, relax.
Yeah, I mean, like, we're watching the crew of the Enterprise like be somewhere, but it's not like Earth is in ruins. Like, she could be like out and about in the galaxy.
She's just living a life, having fun, and then
she can probably teleport like instantly anywhere she wants.
We don't know,
but I wouldn't be surprised.
But then, yeah, at some point, then 100 years ago, she gets word that your planet no longer exists and your people are scattered. So that sucks.
We also know from this episode, piecing together parts of her backstory, was that apparently she knows, like, Tiger Claw style.
Yeah, she's ready to fight.
Yes. Which makes me laugh, because it's like, again, it gets into like what exactly
what's she gonna do?
Like, we know that she has some sort of ESP. Clearly, like, she senses in the episode, like, she senses that Picard's gone or something's wrong. She senses Q's presence. But it's funny, because like when Q brings Picard back on the ship in 10-4 and Guinan appears, he's like, it's you. And they both kind of do
mode,
like this
yeah.
thing. They both go into fighting mode. But what's interesting about that moment is that Q almost, I got to kind of get the feeling that Q feels like Guinan could like mess me up somehow. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's sort of like I get the feeling that he's just like, oh, she could do something. I mean, I could easily get rid of her, but like,
but
if
she
she's left to her
damage.
Devices, she could somehow mess me up. That's kind of what I took from that moment. Because there's like a tenseness to Q's like, Guinan.
There's that element. There's the kind of like, you know, don't mess up. I don't know, the kind of like, this guy Picard is my new toy. Like, what are you gonna do to him? What have you been telling him? I want to play with him.
Exactly.
I knew it was you.
You, Picard. If you had half the sense you pretend to have, you would get her off your ship immediately. And if you'd like, I'd be more than pleased to expedite her departure.
You know him.
We have had some dealings.
Those dealings were 2 centuries ago. This creature is not what she appears to be. She's an imp. And where she goes, trouble always follows.
You're speaking of yourself, Q, not Guinan.
Guinan? Is that your name now?
Guinan is not the issue here. You are. We had an agreement that you would stop meddling with us.
And so I have.
What do you want, Q? You state your business. Get on with it.
I agree, Captain. Enough about this creature. She's diverting us from the purpose of my being here.
But yeah, he's clearly, totally thrown off by Guinan's presence there.
Which again leads into something else. He didn't know she was there. He should have known. He's omnipotent, but somehow he didn't know she was there.
Because he's lazy.
Either he's lazy or I don't know what, but it's just, you would think that if she is such a threat to you know, if she causes so much chaos, that he would at least be aware of her being on the ship. And that kind of speaks to, again, like, is Guinan somehow, like, does she evade Q's spider senses, so to speak, you know?
Yeah, she's clearly got a lot of power, even though we don't, you know the extent of that.
It's interesting. But I guess that's a good point. That's sort of like kind of, it's not a plot, but it's kind of one of like the secondary things that this episode does beyond mm-hmm. the Borg plot, where it's just like we dig a little bit deeper into Guinan, which is kind of cool. But speaking of the Borg, the big thing about the episode, the Borg, the first appearance. And as I was saying, it's crazy how much is set up of the Borg the first time out, like, especially their, like, the cube, like, the iconography of the Borg. It may not have, cube. Like, the whole assimilation angle, but the iconography of the Borg is all set up in this episode. And there are two, like, cool key shots that I want to point out in this episode. It's that awesome matte painting when, like, they're on, like, Riker, Worf, and Data are on board the Borg cube, and they're kind of looking around at all the, you know.
Yeah, like,
the camera pulls out, and it's just, like, endless rows of Borg. Awesome. And then the second shot, which I contest is something that directly influenced The Matrix, when they're in the Borg nursery, and they're pulling, like, they pull out that little compartment, and you see, like, this baby with all this Borg crap on him. I immediately thought of The Matrix with the tubes and everything.
I thought that was funny because, like, the Borg that we all see are all these, like, really screwed up looking things. But when they look at the nursery, it's definitely just, like, a very, it's like the cutest baby I've ever seen.
Yeah. And it's just like a normal little baby stuck on his face.
It just has like a little monocle, like, ooh, it's a Borg.
Oh no, they're gonna Borg this baby.
Captain, this is incredible. We've entered what appears to be the Borg nursery.
Describe it.
From the look of it, the Borg are born as a biological life form. It seems that almost immediately after birth, they begin artificial implants. Apparently, the Borg have developed the technology to link artificial intelligence directly into the humanoid brain. Astounding.
Well, I thought they, you know, yeah, they kind of just put like a little Borg, like, a beanie on his head. Like,
this is one of the few moments I wish we were like a video show, because it would be great to cut and show the listeners what this baby looks like. It might be the cutest baby that has been put to film.
It's they do as much as, because I gotta imagine there's like, they're, you know, they couldn't go full Matrix and just put tubes in the baby's mouth and all this other stuff.
And you can't put too much makeup on a baby. Yeah. You're just like, fine, we'll stick like one or two things on their face.
Well, it's like, they put like a little like robot looking beanie on its head, and then maybe they wrap some cords around his arm or something. It's like, but even still, like, it's
and
still.
And you want the baby to be like crying or like in pain, but you can't really
do
that.
But he's happy.
And, yeah, he comes at the baby's like, ah, wee. Hey, yeah, I'm a boy.
They should have told Riker or Jonathan Frakes before they started filming, okay, like, just before we start, just before we yell action, poke the baby a little bit. You know, just poke him once. Make him, like, upset, and then we'll shoot.
A lot of the time,
the baby to poop its pants.
For, like, TVs and movies, will be like, okay, so you got to give the baby, like, just a little pinch just to, you know, don't hurt him, but you just got to.
That's some probably, like, original series stuff. They're not doing that anymore.
Like, I don't want to pinch the baby.
but then again, the baby shouldn't be in pain because this is the Borg baby. So this baby's right at home.
Yeah, this baby is actually doing just fine, besides the Borg
stuff.
So it
makes sense that the baby is happy. The baby's like, yeah. Well, I guess it's not happy. It's just like, yeah, you know, assimilate me, me. But,
I really like, too, that, like, because what's going on in this part of the episode is basically Q is like, hey, so you want to see, you think you know what the universe is, so he just teleports them to kind of beyond the scope of the Federation, beyond the neutral
zone.
Like
hundreds of light years, or like thousands.
Yeah, they say they're 2 years from maximum warp from the nearest station. And it's just sort of like a lore dump to just be like, so let's see what the Borg, it's cool. Yeah. Like, it's just like, let's learn about the Borg. And they're, for a while, there's like, it's ominous, but they're kind of just like learning about them. And there's a very cool and very, again, ominous thing where they go aboard the Borg and they're exploring the ship. And the whole time they're like, they don't care that we're here.
Yeah, they're not attacking.
And they realize that it's like, it's not that they're friendly. It's that they just don't see them as a threat. Like, they see them as just, like, insects.
Some ants,
and
yeah.
It's like, what's the point of doing anything?
And that is one of the coolest things about the Borg, in my opinion.
It is. And it is, like, it goes to, like, Q's point and the whole thing of just, like, there are things out there that are just, like, beyond your comprehension.
You think you know, you don't know.
It's so cool. It's, like, a really neat idea.
I like that there's that, like, when they go aboard the ship, and there's also, like, the first time that a Borg comes onto the Enterprise. Like, he's just moving, like, slowly, just, like, looking at things, and...
Was that this episode?
Yeah. There's a... They said, man. One Borg aboard, and everyone's like, okay.
Did you guys...
Shoot him, I guess?
Did you guys have, like... There's a moment, like, when one of the Borg first appear on the ship. The status shot of Geordi in engineering, like, yeah, we're ready, sir. And then pause, 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 pause. Then the Borg appears behind his shoulder. It's one of those moments, like, in TV shows or just movies in general, where you're like, the way they frame the shot, you're like, okay, I'm waiting for the special effect to happen. It's not happening. It's like one of those things where, like, in a horror movie, one of those big tropes where, like, someone's in a bathroom and they're, like, opening, like, the mirror, and then they open it and then they close it.
It's like,
yeah, we know they're behind him. Come on, get to it.
I know he's gonna be behind him.
It's one of those, like, visual, like, one of those visual filmmaking like tips to the audience. You're like, yeah, we know something's bad. Like, if you understand, like, the language of filmmaking, so to speak, you're kind of waiting for the moment to happen.
Yeah, you're waiting,
like,
for the shoe to drop and for the thing to happen.
And it's so cool that, like, they kill the Borg shows up and just, like, doesn't respond.
He's just
anything.
Looking at, like,
he starts screwing with the shields, and then they kill him. And the next one comes, and it like, immediately, and all of a sudden they've, like, adapted, and now the gun doesn't kill him.
Yeah.
It's so cool. Like,
and scary.
It is, yeah. And just that, like, again, like, the way that they're just not reacting in any way.
It's an unemotional, like, purely pragmatic enemy that is not going to be scared by Worf running towards you or whatever.
And the design of these things, like, they're instantly iconic. And it's so weird. It's very, like, H.R. Geiger.
Yeah.
And apparently it was, like, influenced by a pretty specific thing. It was H.R. Geiger and... a character named Lord Dredd from the TV series. It sounds like a Nick show. Captain Power and the Soldiers of the Future, which is, like,
interesting.
So if you look up Lord Dredd, it does look like a Borg.
Look this,
like,
guy,
so,
up.
Lord Dredd from Captain Power and Soldiers of the Future.
Another thing I love about the Borg is that whenever one of their own gets killed, they come in and collect, like, the little, like, computer chips.
Oh yeah,
off
the parts. Okay, I'm looking at this guy. He is Borgy.
We got to pick these chips up. There's a supply chain shortage going on. Come on.
Yeah. this guy's Borg as hell.
And it also reminds me a lot of which this movie came after it. I have to imagine was influenced by the Borg, but the movie The City of Lost Children by that French guy Jean Genet or whatever, who did, like, Amelie and Delicatessen. If you ever see
that,
City,
like,
of
steampunky
Lost,
stuff,
kind of more sci-fi than steampunky. But if you ever watch City of Lost Children, it was 95, so I have to imagine he was like, oh, that's a cool vibe.
That's one of those things that, like, I do just fucking love about Star Trek, of, like, something like the Borg or something, like, it's just some element that they were like, I don't know, it's season 2, let's come up with this thing, or it's, you know, season 3, whatever, that then, like, that's just echoed, like, so many times across so many things, because, like, everyone fucking knows Star Trek. Everyone knows what it is. Everyone knows, even if you have never seen an episode, it's like, you know what resistance is futile. You know that, like, cube thing. You know these fucked up Borg guys.
It's fascinating. Like, I wonder if, like, because I don't think, you know, to speak for everyone, like, I don't speak for everyone. I just mean, like, pop culture. Like, I don't think the Borg hit it until Best of Both Worlds. So they were a thing in this episode. But I got to imagine at this time, people, Star Trek still, Next Gen still hadn't quite caught on yet because it was still peaks and valleys. So it wouldn't be until that season three finale.
It's when still the, mostly when they, just the nerds watching instead of like everyone.
It wasn't until Resistance is Futile came in. That's when, that was when it's like, oh, okay, now we're on board.
Now we're here for it.
Yeah, exactly. And I got to wonder, like, is that, and that is a big piece. I guess that was the last component where it's just like, yeah, this is, yeah, the Borg are cool. Like, Star Trek is cool.
Borg are cool. Star Trek's fucking cool. You know what's, you know what rules is science fiction.
Well, it's interesting because, like, this episode, if you take the Resistance is Futile part out and the assimilation, they're kind of just like scary zombies. I mean, I guess they're still like that when the Resistance is Futile thing comes in. But this one, they kind of, I don't know, to me in this episode, they feel more bug-like. Kind of, if that's, if you guys get what I mean, like
it's kind of like a hive mind.
Exactly. It definitely like sticks with that the more we see the Borg, and then eventually we get, you know, Borg Queen and all, which is also very insect like but yeah, at this point it's less about the, like, you know, we will assimilate you, and more still just like, well, we'll wreck your shit, which is still bad.
You will be punished.
We have analyzed your defensive capabilities as being unable to withstand us. If you defend yourselves, you will be punished.
You will be punished. Instead of the, like, we will consume everything that you are, and you have no choice in this.
In this one, it's just like, we want your technology, you know, which I guess technically is what they still want later on, but it's like, we will also assimilate you.
We're also taking your meat bags and everything.
But yeah, another thing I thought was interesting, and I can't remember if this is ever done again with the Borg in future episodes, but the whole idea of regenerating their ship, like they all go into standby mode to regenerate their ship, and you literally see the ship on the the exterior, like, rebuilding itself, which is interesting.
I wonder, I wonder what the original effect of that looked like, because that's probably the remastered effect that we're seeing, maybe?
Well, from what I understand, because, yeah, we did watch the remasters, but from what I understand, when they remastered TNG for HD, they couldn't replicate, they couldn't just have the old effects as they were, because the way they did the effects then, it had to do with, like, you know, interlaced TVs and all that, so the way they did the effects. So what they did when they remastered them was they literally duplicated the look of the old effects. So yes, they are technically like CG effects or whatever you want to refer to them as, but they went out of their way to make them look as they did before.
Wow, I like that.
Which is interesting. Yeah. So I guess technically it's not what the effects that were there before, but as far as the look of it goes, it should be more or less what it was when it aired in 1988 or 89.
I like that. Yeah, not a like, well, we can do it so much cooler now. It's like, no, it looked like this, and
we want to make it look like that again. So
making
we'll
it look
just...
like that.
Yeah, exactly. Which I thought was admirable when they redid the effects, or when they remastered TNG. Because if you recall, with TOS, they flat out just redid the effects.
Yeah.
Made them look all spiffy and whatnot.
Shame.
But with TNG, it's like, no, we want to make them look like they did before. So, anyway. Kind of cool. This is, out of all the episodes we've done, this might be the one I have the fewest amount of notes on. Because, again, like, this episode is, like you mentioned, Mike, just a lore dump. It's like, here's the Borg, and we're going to learn about the Borg. And yes, there is, like, a threat of the Borg in the episode. But for the most part, it does kind of just feel like, it's almost like we're getting like a Wikipedia article on a bad guy that we're going to get more of in the future.
You're like, this is the baseline. Remember this. We'll come back to it. We'll do some more shit with it. But for now, just know.
And it's like, it's just weird because stuff does happen. But on a whole, it really just is
action
a preview,
in the episode,
as Q says.
But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. Like it is, especially as an episode of a TV show, it just kind of like resets your expectations, I think, for what the being so early on in TNG, and like TNG can be cool. I can imagine watching this as it came out.
TNG can be cool.
Like I can imagine like watching this as it came out as like, oh man, TNG is like not really doing it.
It's okay, but
like,
you know,
okay, all right, TNG, maybe this will be something. Yeah, this can do some interesting new things.
Yeah. Give it a chance, man.
It's kind of, it's kind of why I said this is a good episode, but I wouldn't say it's a great one. Because, yeah, it does introduce the Borg. It is a fun, well, I shouldn't say a fun Q episode. Q is in it, but I wouldn't say it's a fun Q episode.
It's not his most fun, yeah.
Again, he's a little more sinister in this one, but it's an important episode. But again, like, I feel like it could have been a little better if they had tied it back in with Sonia Gomez and her whole idea of like, oh, I can't wait. You know, like, that would be a little more interesting and have a bit like a little more satisfying payoff with that for this episode. But as it is, it is kind of just sort of an important, fun world building episode. Mm-hmm. And, 18 people died, whatever.
Yeah, 18 people did die.
Unnamed, whatever.
Yeah, I love that moment where they're in the conference room and Worf's like, I have the crew member death sheet pulled up. He's like, not now. It's like, we don't have time for that now.
Oh, okay.
What a weird thing to bring up. It's just like, yeah, they're going to kill us. Like, by the way, here are the 18 people that died. Like, really, Worf, now? It's just like, that's not healthy.
Sorry, Worf wants to honor the dead.
Yeah, and like I said, I appreciate that this episode lets Q be a little more sinister. Like, I love mm-hmm. his line delivery. It's just like, what does he say? Like, this is as real as your so-called life gets. Like, that's a cool, sinister line from Q. Like, it made me, like, I mean, don't get me wrong. We all love Q episodes and Q is fun. But, like, there are times when he's being, like, a fun jokester where I sort of miss his more sinister edge that we'd see earlier on.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I might say this is a great episode. I think that...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I think that, like, it's easy to take for granted, like... The Borg, like they like
the
introduce
fucking
it.
Borg.
Like that, without this episode, you don't get so much of what's cool about the Next Generation.
That's
like,
true.
You don't
like
get
said,
best of both worlds.
One.
You don't get best yeah. of both worlds, part one and two.
This might be the most important episode of the first two seasons.
Possibly,
in,
yeah.
in many ways, yes.
Well, let's when we return with. So well, first off, I guess, is it safe to say we'd all recommend this episode?
I do want to say one more thing.
Oh.
Yeah. Just in looking more at the notes about the making of this, the Ferengi were originally intended to be the main villains for the Next
Aww.
Generation.
Oof. Yeah, that was a quick course correction there from them.
Very good.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine the best of both worlds, but it's Ferengi?
But it's some fucking Ferengi.
Oh
they
God.
Ferengi Picard
well,
somehow.
That makes you wonder how proud must they have been of that like butt face makeup they made for the Ferengi.
They're like, we've got it. We fucking have it.
This is it. And like, do you remember like,
Females.
Like this is God, so many season one episodes are terrible, but like I remember when the Ferengi first show up in season one, they have like these laser whips or whatever those are. They're so stupid.
Oh yeah.
And just I'm so glad they course corrected and the Ferengi like were just doofuses
just,
that
yeah,
appear
just some
occasionally.
Doofus joke characters who then once we get to oh my gosh.
DS9.
What is it? DS9. Yeah. Because for DS9, I love Quark. I love that guy. But he's not an antagonist. He's not a main antagonist. No. He's a goofball. He runs a bar. He likes to scam. That's fine.
Exactly. Well, however you view this episode, I would definitely recommend it. I mean, obviously, it's not as epic and memorable as The Best of Both Worlds. I mean, that's honestly the thing that put TNG on the map, I mm-hmm. think. But it's still a really fun episode. It's an important one,
it's
and
a
definitely
building
one
block.
I'd recommend checking out. Yeah, exactly. But the next time you see us on the TrekCast, we will be watching Season 3, Episode 19's Captain's Holiday.
Is that what I think it is?
We will be relaxing and basking in the sun in Onrisa.
Is this your pitch?
We will learn
yeah, it's Dave's
of pick. The mysterious origin of the DTF statue.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Isn't this your favorite episode, Jackie?
This is possibly my favorite episode.
Yes!
we'll get into it, but it's got everything. The DTF statue, Picard in little shorts.
We've talked a lot about like holograms and fake fantasies. Let's have a real fantasy.
Let's go to the real thing.
Let's go to the real thing.
Let's
We're
hear
going
what
to the pleasure
Riker's
planet.
Been talking about all yeah. along.
But
about
that
Risa.
Horny bastard keeps referencing. Let's go there with the one guy who hates the idea of a vacation so much.
It's funny. We've been building Risa up like through this whole series. That this will also serve as kind
just,
of a prequel.
I'm imagining it's just going to be like the. the underground scene from Matrix Reloaded.
Only orgy the entire time.
Has it been a while since you guys have seen this episode?
A decent chunk of time. Like I said, I've seen this episode a number of times.
Well, we mentioned Captain Picard's physique. Maybe we'll get a little closer look.
Let's get a closer look. That said,
I just hope he can have a relaxing time.
Yeah, I bet he'll be able to read his book and, like, relax.
I think we deserve a little relaxation after this. I mean, this was a scary episode, you guys, that we just did.
18 people died.
We were in a scary part of the galaxy that no one's ever been in before, or at least not the Federation.
There's a lot of sharp edges on that cube.
Yeah, I think we deserve a holiday.
A captain's holiday.
A captain's holiday. But that'll do it for this episode of the Apocalypse Video Trekcast. See you out there. That was a good
line. That was good.
Captain's Log Supplemental. After surviving our ordeal with the Borg, not to mention being fondled excessively by Ensign Gomez, I'm looking forward to leaving Season 2 behind and taking a much-needed holiday on everyone's favorite pleasure planet, Risa. I plan on bringing my personal relaxation light, a good book, and of course, making use of the complimentary DTF statue.